Hey everybody here, welcome back to Beyond the Trek's next fireside slash podcast here with one of our own, Nick Ruggieri. And Nick is first and foremost a husband, a father, a teammate, a Green Beret, somebody who I honestly look up to and somebody I met not too long ago through Gavin's Journey, who which you have here is our secondary host today. And it's been awesome to get to know Nick, bring him on as part of this team, get to learn a lot more about him, and he provides so much value. One of the things I'd like to throw out there is Nick's purpose in life now is to be a man of God and family. And really what he goes out and teaches a lot of people at the organizations that he serves with and people that he serves alongside is his message has been understanding how you want your life to be is the first step in creating the future of your dreams. And I've learned a lot from him just in the short couple of years that I've known him, and I'm super honored that we're able to have him on here today. I'm even more honored that I get to be alongside him in this journey in this organization that we're building. So, Nick, welcome. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
Yeah. So, Nick, you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Multiple areas to start, I guess. I'm a child of divorce. That's one place to start, right?
There you go.
When I was real little, I have an older sister and a younger brother. And we were visiting my grandma in West Virginia. She went to the store, came back, and she was like, "Oh, I saw your brother at the store today." And I was like, "Well, Daniel was here all day." And she was like, "Oh, no, your other brother." I was probably four or something. And I was visiting my dad's side of the family, and I did not know that my dad had a relationship before my mom and had a kid with another person. So I had an older half brother, right? Had this older half brother I never met before until that situation. And then back down to Georgia is where we lived, Augusta, with my mom and my grandparents, Nana and Papa, until something happened with her. And to be honest, I'm really not sure what the issue was. I know she was, maybe it was a DUI or something, somewhere where she wasn't able to take care of us, all of us kids. And my grandparents said they weren't going to do it anymore. So then we moved to Tennessee when I was around six or seven to live with my dad, me and my sister, my brother. And then all this is just backstory of probably how I am really, right? We stayed there for a couple years till my mom came to Tennessee to be with us. And then when she finally got on her feet and got her own place, then we moved back in with my mom till around, till it was about high school, till I got to be a high school. And then I chose to move back in with my dad and my stepmom, and my sister and my brother stayed at my mom's house. Now, when we did move to Tennessee, I say this just to give a backstory on me and my, how big I am is, when I lived with my grandparents in Georgia, they didn't let us eat outside of eating hours, you know, like there wasn't a lot of freedom. And I was a skinny, small kid. I played lots of sports. I was very athletic and not big at all. And then when I moved to Tennessee with my dad, and he was working a lot of the time trying to take care of all of us, and we had food stamps and we had access to food that probably wasn't good for you. And basically from the time I moved to Tennessee till probably graduating college, I ballooned up. Like I just ate. I don't know if it was emotional eating or just access to food or boredom or what, but basically I was in a very small stature body when I was in Georgia. And then when I moved to Tennessee, I just started eating and I got pretty big to where, pretty hefty. I would say I look at stuff. I can look back now and look at pictures like sixth grade. I was 6 foot, 250 pounds. Like more than I weighed now, and you know, and not a good weight. But I think I'm talking about all this because being big has been a big part of my like journey as a person, you know, trying to understand life as an overweight kid and, you know, not have as many girlfriends or, you know, try to be the fat, funny guy or whatever, you know, gives you a lot of personality, right? So I was just a bigger kid growing up, living with my dad. High school was not a difficult thing for me, and I played football, and I was going to keep playing football. So from high school to college, I played a little bit of college football, and in the midst of my sophomore year, my dad just randomly passed away while I was around 20. That was a weird time where I had to step up and kind of become the 20-year-old father of my 17-year-old brother, but not like on purpose. It's just like, you know, how you feel like you owe something to people. I don't know. I just felt like I just had to step up and do whatever I could for him. So, like I said, I was playing college football and I tried to figure out how to make more money. So I joined the Army Reserves to try and help pay for my school. So that summer, I went to basic training after my dad passed away. And I left and I was like 285 pounds. And I graduated basic at 210 or something. I was real small. I went back to Union College where I played college football. Said something to one of my coaches, like, "Hey coach, what's up?" And he said, who are you?" Like, they didn't know who I was. So I had to gain a bunch of weight to get back to where I was. And then, I was in that reserve unit. And then the next summer I went to AIT, became a carpentry masonry specialist, and basically just a builder. I went to the Naval CB school in Gulfport, Mississippi, learned how to do that, came back and finished my senior year football. And then I went to the yearly training with my reserve unit. We did that at the Naval Training Center in California, which was my first NTC rotation. And I actually built some of they call them CMUs, but they're concrete masonry units, the buildings. My unit built some of the buildings that in my recent time at NTC with the armor unit that I'm with, we actually attacked the village that we built when I was a young specialist, which is crazy. But after that rotation, I knew that I couldn't deploy with this unit because they were really, really bad at everything. And that it would get hurt. I would get hurt if something happened. I had to deploy with them. So I went active duty to be an X-ray tech. And, I thought the job would be better than it was. And it was just, the school was not difficult. I made some really great friends and I had some good times, but it wasn't something that I really enjoyed doing. And basically after that, I got to my first unit, Brooke Army Medical Center, and I had to figure out like how to do something else. So I talked to my first sergeant and I was like, "I need to do a different job." He said, "You can wait till your contract's up. You can, pick a new MOS after that, or you can go to selection." And I didn't even know what it was, to be honest. And he said, and I was like, "Well, what's selection?" He said, "You know, be special forces." And I was in my stupor. I don't know why I would even think this. I was like, "Okay, I'll do that." Like it was something everyone did, really had no clue. Couple months later, had went to the brief and did the physical. Everything was good. And November 2019, I'm at Fort Bragg, North Carolina at selection. I didn't know how to climb a rope. Couldn't do anything like remotely soldiery at all. I was a very big body and I could ruck and that wasn't a big deal. But basically, I didn't know a lot. But a couple of officers there that I met like in processing, they saw, I guess, a little potential in me and helped me out, helped me figure some stuff out, taught me how to do some land nav. And basically I just had enough motivation in me from not wanting to work at the hospital anymore that I just was too stupid to quit, I guess. And I never quit. So at the end, I was very fortunate to get selected and change the career progression for me and my family for the rest of my life. It's probably the greatest thing that ever happened to me is being too stupid to know better and just going to selection. Turn into getting selected, becoming an 18 Delta, which is crazy because there was one point where I was in the Q course and I thought, you know what, I've been here for too long. I need to pick a different MOS and I was going to do a different job. And then my cadre, I tried to talk to him one day and be like, "Give me a different MOS." And he was like, "Well, what's your GT score?" And I said, 135. He's like, "No, you're Delta. Sorry." And so then you're stuck at the course for a year longer than all the other MOSs. But it was probably the best decision that someone ever let me not make ever. Being 18 Delta is the best job on a team. It's just phenomenal. And then the type of people you get to meet in the medical field, being an 18 Delta is ridiculous. Just a gift. So finishing that and then having a few connections in the schoolhouse, I think that I don't know if it happens like on purpose or if they ask about you when you're going to your next location or whatever. But when I got to seventh group, for some reason, the guy I met that pulled me in, I was in S1 checking in. And some random guy grabbed me. It was like, "Come with me." And he walked me down to the team room that I was going to interview with. I guess I didn't really know what was happening, but I think somebody at the schoolhouse had already like sent my name to his buddy who worked the seventh group, knew I was coming, and said, "Hey, you need to grab this guy," because I got so lucky to be on what I would consider the best team that anyone could have ever been on. And it was just by chance. So I think that something good happened. And back then I wasn't really, I would consider myself as into Jesus as I am now. I wouldn't have thought that it was, you know, God given gift. You know, it definitely was divine, the intervention to get me to that team and to be a part of that. So then I'm on this team for, you know, 4 years. I did a JSET in Mexico and two Afghanistan deployments, and just really, you know, got to experience what it was like to be a Green Beret. And then in all that, you know, had a kid or two, had one kid, was pregnant again, trying to figure out how to make more money and still be in the Army. And the physician assistant program is another wonderful gift and opportunity that I was given. Put an application in and got accepted and ended up going to San Antonio and then Hawaii and learned how to become a PA. And then I ended up at Fort Stewart in Georgia as the 164 Armor Brigade or Armor Battalion PA for, it's going on 5.5 years now. I've been in the same job for 5.5 years, and it has been a joy and a gift and a privilege to be part of this unit and to be somewhere where my career currently is.
Yeah. Greg, Gavin.
I'll follow that up kind of. I think what you hit on, Nick, about, you know, just getting lucky or a coincidence. I heard something the other day on a podcast I was listening to, and the guy said, "Is it odd or is it God?" And I just, it's something simple, but like super profound. And I think like the people in your life, 100%, there's no mistake. It's not a coincidence that people get put in your life. You know, I'm honored to be here. And there's so much we could talk about. It's like not only to call you a brother, and the chance to get to know you over the last 4 or 5 years. It's crazy how time flies. You know, when I first met you in Korea, you know, like going on, was it almost 4 years now, but, just the connection we've been able to develop and grow in and grow in our faith. And just, you know, there's many times that over the last few years for me where, you know, I'm not sure where I'd be or what I'd be doing if it wasn't for having you in my life and getting to know your family. But yeah, you have just an incredible story. So, it's very, very unique, one too. And you've had, I remember there was a video not long ago, I think it's one of on our site. And it was like, it was a reel that came across and it was a gunfight going on. And I think Chad might've sent it to me or something. And he was like, that sounds like Nick in it. And I'm like, yeah, I think it is Nick. And I said to him, like, yeah, that's me. I was like, it's just crazy, but it's like something you wouldn't hear of. Cause you know, I look at you as, you know, a face of humility and somebody that, you know, doesn't have to go. And you know, you go by actions and not by words. So just, again, somebody that's always been an extreme inspiration to me.
Yeah. And the one thing I didn't mention was how I met Nick. Right. And I think this can be the segue into how your guys' journeys like crossed and how you guys continued to build the relationship and how this team started to get built. But I remember, you know, people can go back and listen to Gavin's episode, but when he was in his car accident and he was in the hospital down in Savannah, I remember I said, all right, hey, I'm going to drive down. And I drove down and I walked in this room and Nick was sitting by the window and he looks up and goes, "What's up?" And I looked at you and I was like, "What's up, man?" I'm Chad. And you're like, "I'm Nick. I'm the PA." I went, okay, how's it going? And just being able to sit there with both you guys and just be able to talk for a while. And the one quote I'll never forget is, I remember, I think this was super early in the stages, and we were just talking about, hey, like life and Gavin and our families and things. And I remember saying, like, you know, man, I don't think I'm anybody special. You, like, being just joking around completely, were like, well, I got a tab that says I'm specials. And it was like in the most nonchalant way. And that kind of like kicked off, you know, us being able to talk and grow. And then, you know, being able to tell you that, hey, man, you know, we're kind of building this thing. Like, what do you think? And it was awesome to be able to call you. And you immediately were like, yeah, man, how do I do it? And that's been, you know, over a year in the making. And that's super awesome. But
well, I think we definitely talked about that on the wet boots thing too, and like, and you know, shout out to them for putting us on there and chatting us up. We appreciate that. But like, they're in the realm of that large span of my military career. I don't think, like we said, no one sat down with me and was like, "Hey, man, what are you looking for? What are you trying to do with your life? Like, here, let me help mentor you." Now that stuff is accessible and it's there, you know, like, but it's there for like West Point officers who meet their other West Point officer that talks to them like, "Oh, what do you, you know, what's your career progression look like? Or what do you think?" Or like, there's like subsets of information specifically for a group of people, but not for everyone. And I know Gavin asked me before we started, we were talking about, I don't know how we want to, you know, segue into the crew, but basically there was a time when we were in Korea that, that I had this idea. Because when I was in Korea, I had some of the best team that I've ever worked with. And Marco Jones, Sergeant First Class now, was my platoon sergeant. And what was LT's name?
Brandon.
Brandon. All right. This guy, stud. Stud. He was a mechanic or something before he became an officer, or helicopter mechanic or something. I don't remember what he was. Anyway, he was squared away, stud. And we had like some of the best NCOs and kids ever, and I was trying to figure out how to help them already being so good at what we were doing as a med platoon. So I got this book, shout out to John C. Maxwell. Okay, it's called The Leader's Greatest Return. This is the workbook that goes to the book. This is the one that started me really in like guiding me in how to help younger guys be better, bring them all to the table, like, you know, help them understand that their worth and their and how to make them better, and how I can be a facilitator to help them get to where they want to be, and not, you know, at any of my own agenda, but to really help them pursue their dreams. So me and Marco were just talking about it, trying to figure it out, and we never really like quite put it together. You know, him and I had talked about it and done it and like had the thought, and you know, soldiers run in and out of your platoon. They come and they go and you get new ones and whatever. And when I got back from, I can't remember if I was forced to go to this MEPS detail. Basically, the Army said, "We got more people. We need to send somebody to help MEPS and do physical exams." And, it turned out to be a really great, TDY for me, but it was like forced upon and not what I had wanted to do. But when that happened, we got a couple new soldiers that came in, a couple studs, Will Berg and Evil Sizer. I had a few studs from the way back too, but these guys were, you know, special, different people. I wanted to really help get to the next level, to see that there was more to the Army than just the 164 Armored Battalion Med Platoon. And so we were just, you know, chatting about one day, and then I was telling them about all this stuff that I had already pre-worked out in the book about how to help, and like how I wanted to come together with this like round table kind of crew of people that we could, you know, all get better. And basically, me and, to be honest, the Evil Sizer is the one that started it all. He didn't name it, but he just created a group text on Signal, that was me and him and Chad and, maybe January and, Wolf and somebody else. I don't know, just a few of us. And then we started talking, and then we were like, "All right, here's what we're going to do. I did an initial assessment. First of all, I told him all about what it was that I wanted to do. Then I did an initial assessment of everybody. My wife teaches her own class on goal setting and stuff, but she does it not just for a person, but for her realtor job, to teach other realtors too. But basically I stole a bunch of her information, her paperwork, and used it to try and like get an assessment of my guys and like, you know, who and how they were and wanted to be. I used that initial assessment, and then I tried to help them facilitate. I got them all appointments with the behavioral health person to help them understand more what their core values were. So I got them all encounters with her so they could figure out what they really wanted out of their life. And then I you know, made them set goals, and we started a book club and basically like a workout club. And I just tried to help facilitate the movement of what they wanted for their future. And that grew to about 10 of us total, where we were meeting literally every single day to work out, but two or three times a week for like individual, I wouldn't say counseling, mentoring, and the book club and meals, and basically just iron sharpening iron 24/7. And, you know, what a horrible, unfortunate event where we got sent to Germany, but a wonderful gift of that opportunity that we created, you know?
Yeah, it was like we talked about at the beginning. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. But yeah, I mean, even in, you know, moments of darkness, there's so much good that could, that comes out of it. And even when I saw like kind of crew being formed, like I was never really a member of the crew, but I remember seeing it kind of from the outside looking in, like, this is something special. Like, these are a bunch of guys that, you know, are kind of uniting around one thing, literally just the want to be better. And it's a lot of something that, you know, beyond the trek in general, like that's what we want to do. It's about the whole, you know, the whole aspect of human performance. So all those areas of your life. It was really cool even from the outside in, because as everyone knows and everyone listening, you get caught up in whatever you're doing. Like whatever I was doing at the time, you know, whether being a platoon leader or an XO or whatever, you get very caught up in that. But, you know, taking the time to notice seeing these guys coming out here and doing something and kind of, you know, being able to put aside all the other, you know, noise that was going on at the time. It was something really cool, and it drew me to it. I'm like, I want to see like what these guys are doing. Like, I want to be a part of this.
So like outside of, because I mean, it was a work, I don't want to say it wasn't a function, right? It was a work-based group. Now, what I wanted to ask you is do you want to, would you mind diving into like what you were doing in your personal life too? Because I know there was a time, you know, where you and Gavin were really sitting down doing studies, and you guys brought in other people too. Guys now, I think Wilson was one, where you guys were like on this, you know, in your professional journey, you guys were bringing all these like-minded people and stuff together, but in your personal life, you guys were doing that too, just on a completely different level, because you guys were all going through things at different times.
Yeah, it was like a perfect storm for sadness, if you want to look at it like that. Just a whole bunch of sad dudes like, bro, are you sad? Bro, I'm sad. Dude, he looks sad too. Let's get Trevor. He looks sad. Oh, what about him? Let's all hang out together. We'll be sad together. It'll be great. I think, you know, struggle absolutely creates, you know, growth, and like I would never go back and ask for that to have not happened to me. It was a very unfortunate and difficult time. And even in the beginning of that rotation, when my wife and I had disagreements and decided to step away from whatever it is we were calling our marriage. I wouldn't say it was full or whatever at the time, but just us just saying, you know, this is a break. And I would say it was more of a one-sided thing that I didn't really know that I needed, that I didn't want, but it was appropriate looking back. But man, I was, you know, intrusive thoughts and sad all the time and short with people. And I didn't eat well and I didn't take care of myself at the beginning of that rotation. And I got sick and I was in a hospital for a few days. I had the flu. Legitimately, I was sick, but I think it definitely all contributed to that. When I stepped back from being sorry for myself and realized I had to, you know, make myself better and not just wallow in my sadness. You know, the guys are right there to support me with, you know, with whatever I needed. And I didn't really tell a lot of people what was going on. I kept that shit to myself. And first of all, that sucks. Cause a lot of us dudes are going through shit that they just keep to yourself. Cause you don't have a trusted group of individuals to tell that to. And that sucks, because being so close to all these people and feeling more alone than you've ever been, that's a really sad, shitty place to be. And that'll make bad choices for anybody. But once I finally was able to see that, that's another thing about crew. It wasn't just like physical and all that stuff. Like, it was a place where I never felt that I couldn't be honest with the guys, or that I needed to be hide anything. I was more vulnerable in that small space of grown men than I've been with any other group of men ever. And it was easy to do that because we all had trusted each other with that information, you know? And when I finally got to, you know, tell everybody what was going on, like, all right, cool, we get it now. We know what's, you know, like, let's get him out of this funk or whatever. So basically it started with just reading the Bible every day. First of all, that was like number one. Like if I was with someone and I thought I was doing a good job, but I clearly wasn't. Where is my example to do a better job? There's only one place you can find that, and that's, you know, God and Jesus, right? Like the Bible, I'll start there. Maybe if you know, he knows how to do it, I'll figure out, I'll see if I can do it like that. So I started doing that every day, and then I started journaling too, trying to write down as much as I could. And some of those first weeks of those journals, they were pretty dark, not the best. You know, I definitely wouldn't read them out loud to my children, if you know what I mean. But I mean, that was like the beginning point to getting better, was acknowledging that I am not the best thing since sliced bread, and humbling myself to realize that someone else has a lot of stuff to offer me. You know, that takes many years. Like, I wasn't like that. You know, Staff Sergeant Ruggieri wasn't smart enough to humble himself. He was a Turd Ferguson, you know?
You saying that though, now that you've been through that, because there's probably people that are listening and they would be like, well, I don't have that group. I don't have this. Going, I can speak for myself. And this is a question I want to ask you, and Gavin, you too. Because you were vulnerable with a group of people, do you think you've gained the confidence now to say like, dude, I'm good to be vulnerable in front of almost anybody now, because at the end of the day, like, I got to answer for me and show people like it's okay?
I think it's necessary, right? I think people think because I am who I am and part of the battalion or whatever, that Nick doesn't have problems. They probably think that I don't have a lot of shit or nothing going on, unless they see it or unless you tell them, right? Like, yeah, it's much easier to be vulnerable with people and share that, knowing that it doesn't hurt. You know what I mean? You feel like, I don't think that I'm going to get, I wouldn't say cheated, but no one's going to be like judging me for telling them something about my life, right? They're going to want to listen. And just being in the battalion for so long has given me the credibility to be able to have that conversation with anyone and them not like kind of judge it, right? Like, you meet somebody new and maybe they say it's like, I don't know if he's telling the truth or whatever. But like earlier today, this is not about being vulnerable, but I have just had dinner at the DFAC with some of the younger kids. And one of the guys, Kaz, he asked me about my back, and I said, yeah, my back hurts still. I pulled it doing some deadlifts the other day. And then one of the other ones was like, oh, well, you were out there playing soccer. I figured you might have heard of that. I was like, well, no, you know, I did play soccer with you guys because it's something I enjoy and it's worth fighting through the pain. But literally, I'm in pretty much excruciating pain all day long just sitting here on my back. But it's, you know, it's hard for them to like believe that unless you're really honest and vulnerable with them about everything. So I just try to be like that with everything, right? No, I wouldn't. I don't think that. I think that repetitions on being vulnerable with people does make it easier to be vulnerable with people. And I think that if you don't have someone to be vulnerable with like that, then you should get counseling or you should go see somebody. Because even before all of this, even understanding vulnerability, I had to go see the psych a bunch of times, right? Like to help, for her to help me like get past my own self into understanding that it's okay. And I think there's so much of, Brené Brown does this talk on TED Talks or whatever about vulnerability. It's a very enlightening video, but basically she talks about the heart being closed off to all feeling. If you don't feel one thing, you close them all off. You can't like only feel a few things. Like, and I was in a place where it was easier to just shut off, you know, when you got PTSD or whatever it is, however your mind changes whenever you come back from a war, right? Whenever the difference you are, whatever the people want to label it, PTSD or whatever that is, it makes you cut off feelings that like you need to have, right? Like psychopaths like me and my fellow brethren had pushed away because we needed to be able to do that to operate in the war. And when you come back, you can't, you either open up all the lines of communication or you shut off all of them. You can't just open up a few and think that you're doing a good job, you know, being kind, but not really vulnerable or telling the truth or whatever it is. It's just, watch the thing. Brené Brown, she's smarter about it than me. But yeah, I was just, I needed to unlock that vulnerability. And once I did unlock it, it was like, okay, now I have the ability to tell somebody the truth. And they have the ability to receive it and understand that I'm trustworthy enough that they could tell it to me. Now, for people that are going through things that don't have somebody to talk to, that is very, like I said, a very lonely place. And you just got to find somebody. And if that somebody is your senior leadership or I mean, it's got to be somebody you trust. And if it's not, and if you can't find somebody you trust, get my information from somebody on this thing. I'll talk to you. I'll happily talk to anybody that's going through something and they don't have anybody to talk to. I'm the guy.
That's a great point, man. I know that our buddy Ken, who has been on here, you know, he had a really powerful episode too. He talks a lot about that, and he's there, and, you know, to get to see him when we were in Louisville, you know, talking to some young, like, collegiate athletes, seeing them open up to him. Cause I remember something you shared with me. It was pretty funny. You're like, apparently, I'm like intimidated. People think I'm not approachable or something. And we were laughing about that. Like, man, if only they knew you, you know, cause they see from the outside, they see a long tab or they see badges or they see all these things that they're like, hey, this guy is like somebody you don't want to approach. You don't want to tick him off or something. Certainly somebody I'm not going to be able to open up to because they're going to think that, you know, I'm being a baby or like, you know, I just need to suck it up, suffer in silence. But, you know, then when they meet you and you share your vulnerability with them, you're able to be vulnerable. You know, they're able to immediately reciprocate that. And then they can open up and kind of talk about what they're going to. There's a lot of power in that. And that's been a, you know, an observation with me. It's something that I've benefited from with you and just, you know, the vulnerability we've been able to share. A big thing, man, that is just in my mind, talking about this vulnerability is, I remember a big thing. It was like a light bulb moment for me. I was sitting in a Shopette parking lot. This is a few years back now. And I remember I was, you know, talking your ear off on the phone about what I was going through, you know, in my relationship at the time. I was like, you know, I don't get it. Like, how can, you know, she do this, that. And then you were like, it's not her or whatever it is. Like it's you. It's you. It's your ego. It's pride. Like you need to kill that. Like you need to get rid of that like right now. And it's like, it hit me. Like I didn't know whether to be pissed off, which I think there was a little bit of that at first. And then it was like, as I sat down and I'm like, no, you're exactly right. And it's funny too. Cause you know, in the message today at church, he went over, Mark 7:20, and it's the Lord speaking. And he said, what comes out of a person is what defiles him. So it's like, you have all these thoughts, all of the, you know, the flesh that has all these thoughts, whether it's, you know, evil thoughts, sexual morality, theft, murder, adultery, coveting, wickedness, that's all examples in that. But it's like, when that comes out of you, that's like whatever sort of exposure or whatever thing on the exterior is causing that, something is causing that, provoking what is inside you to come out. And it's your choice whether or not you act on that. And I think it all really, you know, a lot of it can stem back to pride and that, you know, being able to kill that ego. And that's something we've talked on at length many times.
Yeah, I think it's so much easier now to talk about it than it was to actually be an example for it growing up. You know, like we talk about all these things that we suffered through, and like for instance, you know, the loss of a parent. You know, my dad passed away, and my mom passed away right before I went to Germany, actually. And that was rough too. And I was not dealing with that stuff when I should have been, and then trying to be okay, you know. But all these things that happen to us in our life are, you know, gifts of experiences and opportunities. And I think it's so crazy how divine it is, the gift of this knowledge and experience, because almost every single time that something bad has happened to me in my life, or something that I would consider bad, you know, has then given me some type of, knowledge or you know, skill set or information to then literally turn around and somebody be like, oh, I ended up having to go through this. And I'm like right there next to them, and I've got all the answers for them. Like someone gifted me the ability to help them get through that situation. And I mean, that comes with, you know, I'm in my battalion, right? I'm probably one of the older guys. I'm 39, about to be 40. And these are all kids going through some of the same stuff that I've already been through. And it's easy for me to help them because I've been through it. Just been Like, I don't think that anything that I've struggled, that I've had to go through, has been for nothing. I think it's all been a gift to be able to help someone with their struggle. And like, the insight to that problem just makes me a better leader, makes me a better provider, makes me a better father, makes me a better husband, makes me better Christian, makes me better everything. I would not wish an easier life upon myself for just to be easier.
No, that's a good point, because especially in a military context, but also like when we've interacted with people who aren't in the military yet, you know, they look at some guys, kind of what Gavin was talking about, right? Badges, tabs, all stuff. And like, man, I can't tell him anything because I haven't been through what he's been through. I haven't done what he's done or she's done. And the thing is, I mean, we say it all the time. Trauma is trauma is trauma. You're right, though. Like, I wouldn't change anything that's happened in my life or the tragedy, because then I wouldn't be able to help other people. But this is just the path that I chose. It doesn't mean, you know, doesn't mean I'm better. It doesn't mean you're better than anybody else. I mean, look, you told everybody you went to selection off of a whim. That's not, doesn't make you better than anybody. You just had an opportunity and you took it. But you can, being vulnerable enough to be able to say, hey, man, would you mind helping me out? Like, that's the hardest thing. But I think once you're able to say that and be like, hey, you know, if they say no, like, it's okay. You know, but
it's hard to do that. I'm
confident enough in myself that I can at least say, hey,
it's hard to sit at the gym and like, you know, you got 315 on the bench or whatever, maybe not for you guys, but whenever I do it and be like, oh, I need a spot. And it's like, do I wait here? Do I ask this guy to do that? That's literally, I'm not asking anything. I'm not asking for his name. I ask, like, hey man, can you spot me? That's a hard thing to do, to tell another person that, like, I don't know if I'm strong enough to lift this weight. That's vulnerable. Please come help me. Like, but that's hard. Can you imagine trying to tell somebody, hey, something happened to some of my family members, I'm sad, can I talk to you about it? Like, that's really fucking hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you see as your group like started to evolve and like you started to kind of get more comfortable in that, being able to tell people what was going on? And then I'm going to kind of intertwine, like, with Gavin's accident and stuff, how did you continue to grow in yourself and be able to look and humble yourself and continue to give back, right? Like, through tragedy, looking at your tragedy, looking at other people's tragedy. Like, did you have a change of heart? How did you go forth after that?
You're talking to Gavin or me?
No, you.
Oh,
great question.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What is it? Yeah. So, you know, I don't know what, if I would consider a tragedy. I think one thing, you know, things sometimes don't go your way, right? And to you, it could be like a tragedy. To you, it might be the end of all things. When I was unable to see the light through the darkness, the only thing really that was helping was reading the Bible and writing down these feelings and then moving on, right? And then I go to the gym and a few hours a day of the gym will cure anything, right? No, but I definitely, I had to talk these things out. Like, the longer that I held on to, the longer the words didn't come out of my mouth, even if I thought them, like, okay, I think about it, the longer I waited to hold the words inside my body and not let them out of my mouth, the more suffering I put my own self through. The second I gave it breath and gave it away to somebody or something else, to praying to God, to giving it to, the behavioral health person I spoke with, talking to the guys, like, the second that stuff happened, everything changed. Like, extreme weight was lifted. Outside looking in, everyone probably thought everything was going fine until you actually know the truth. And then now everyone can be like, oh, he's got problems just like the rest of us. You know, I can share mine with him. And it made it easier for them to talk to me. And then, you know, obviously things happen, and it was touch and go there for a while, that I was like, maybe going to go home or not, or stay in Germany or not go home or whatever. So my leadership knew what was going on. My leadership was aware of my situation, and, because it's lonely at the top. Before crew existed, I didn't have a lot of people to talk to. And, you know, you try to, I guess, ego wise, keep an image. But so, you know, the people in charge knew what was going on. The people in charge knew what I was struggling with, so they weren't messing with me. That I figured out, you know, how to talk to people and get off my chest, I think it was better for everyone, for all of us. But I mean, that's not, you know, that's just one situation of struggle. You know, I had some issues doing a good job as a husband and a father for a while, and I'm trying to do a better job, right? Like, but I mean, I struggled when my dad passed away. I sort of like pushed away all the stuff when my mom passed away. I have, you know, there's failures in my life. There's positive in my life. I went to 160th selection, and I was not selected, asked to return, you know, and there's a lot of things that reset my medical goals after that, because I, you can't talk a lot about what happened there, but basically I wasn't up to par medically for them. And so I did some stuff to try and, you know, make myself better at it. Yeah.
You're drinking a milkshake and then you realize you're having a heart attack at that moment. That and you're crazy. Like, oh, I'm going to go check into the ER and tell them that I'm AFib right now.
Yeah, that was something else for sure.
Yeah, that I know, especially, man, with your job, you know, you're a provider, literally, quite literally in the name. And I know that this is something I recently talked to Shane, and something that we always share is like, you know, sometimes it's hard to reach out to Nick because you feel bad, because it's like you're asking him for something. You're asking him for something that you can't return the favor. Like he can do this, but like you're like, man, I feel like every time I'm reaching out to him, it's just like because I need something. And it's like, and I've tried to make it like there's so many times I can't even count them because it's so high. And it's been a huge, you know, blessing to be able to have you and be able to, hey, if I need something, it's like boom and snap a finger, like, which is not common in anybody's situation. But you know, you see, it was like when you said about your mom passing away, like until we had talked, you know, for a while and I found that out, I would have never known that, like seeing how you carried yourself every day. And you know, each day you wake up, you are providing for other people, like their medical needs, their prescriptions, filling things out for them. And you know, but at the same time, like you're very much in the fight battling these things that are going on in your life. And it's like, but watching you from the outside, you know, I wouldn't have known. I knew because, you know, we had a relationship and we were close, and I knew that you're going through these things, but somebody on the outside who didn't know that would have never guessed, like, oh, he has all these things going on right now. You know, he's still out there, you know, doing what he can for others when they come and need his help.
Yeah, I try to always be that kind of, you know, accessible to you guys. And I love it when you and Shane call me and ask me for stuff. I love being able to, you know, be of help. But here's the thing that I know about that is that literally everyone in this entire world that you look at or walk or bump into in a day is going through something. There's no like, you know, money's great and it's good to have, but like every single person that you know is going through something, and not all of them are going to tell you about it, right? So when I see people, I try to make sure that whatever the situation was before they saw me, they're at least a little happier when they leave. So that's pretty much how I run my clinic. But generally that is the thing, like being the one of one and having friends is knowing that people aren't always going to come to me and say, hey, Nick, how are you doing? They're going to come and say, hey, Nick, can I need this or whatever? And that's okay. That's my job. But that doesn't mean everyone does it, but definitely that's pretty much the world that I live in, is as I'm a facilitator for being able to help people, and I want to do that. So I'm sorry that sometimes it feels like you're just asking for stuff, but that's not what it feels like to me.
And I know that too. And that's what I try when people have come to me and said that too. I'm like, I promise you that's not how that's not how he's looking at it. You know,
I might be sarcastic genuinely enjoys or funny
doing that and
in that moment, but I definitely want to be helpful, you know?
Exactly. You know, being useful and being helpful. I mean, that was a quote I heard, you know, something else I was listening to. I think it was actually, I shared it with you that one time. It was that like Real Ones with Shia LaBeouf, that episode when he talked about like, hey, mm-hmm. How can I be useful now? It's like, that's something I look at. Like, you know, that's like, what is your purpose beyond like, you know, being useful to others? And that's something that, you know, I really see like going off this example is like, it's being useful, but it's so much more than that too. And in our group, when we met, you know, going over our book study, you know, for those months with our good crew, man. And like just the conversations we would get into, and everybody was going through some stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was just like all these different perspectives that you're hearing from. And it's like, man, like, you know, maybe, you know, he was thinking about hanging it up at this point in time, but it's like, and who knows what could have led to that. You know, some of these things that some of our guys were going through, like there's talks with Trevor and, you know, it's like, but we had each other to kind of lean on and talk about that. 'Cause it's perspective is everything. And I know an issue and definitely want to hear your thoughts on it. But like something I used to look at is I would hear, you know, people would come up to me with these, or I would hear things about what somebody else is going through. And I think if it's like kind of trivial, like oh, really like that, yeah, that's what's really got you right now. It's like everybody has their giants though, you know, like yours might be different from somebody else's. And it probably is based on the experiences you have in life. Like, you know, you've been in the middle of a gunfight and, you know, been trying to save somebody's life and maybe weren't able to, like that might be different from, you know, somebody, you know, losing a job or like, you know, somebody getting sick. Like it's different, but you know, it might not be that to somebody else. So to somebody else, that is like being out there and losing someone or, you know, losing a loved one. Like, so, you know, your perspective has a lot to do with that. And just kind of not really, you know, just realizing that, hey, we're not trying to measure up like what somebody else is going through, because if somebody else it's, you know, it's on their heart, like they're going through that and they need help with it.
I think, I struggle with that still. And it's not just like perspective wise is really important to have some, but also like to be able to know when to use it appropriately. And some other people's issues in my mind aren't that big a deal, but I don't have that lived experience that person has. And I don't know what they're going through or what it actually, the toll that it plays on them versus some things that might be bothering me might not play the same toll on them, right? But this is just 2 days ago, Nicholas was trying to, Valentine's Day, he got a gift of V-Bucks for this video game, right? Cool. He loves it. It's awesome. Whatever. He's trying to input the data into the system. And it's like a jacked up system. You think they make it easier for these kids, but he basically put the V-Bucks in. It went to something else, a different account or something. They couldn't figure out where it went. And then they were trying to figure it out. And then Allie called me for help. And I'm like, I don't know how it works. And this is stuff. And then she pans over to him and he's like trying to use the sticks to try and make it right. And he's like almost tearing, right? Like he's upset about this. And to me, this is not a time that your video game points that you will eventually find, I'm sure, or somewhere in the system, but you were crying about it. It doesn't make sense to me. And it frustrates me. And I'm like, this is not the time. Like, and she's like yelling at me, like, you don't get to choose what makes him upset on stuff. And in my own ego and pride, I'm just like, actually I do. I'm the dad. I'm trying to help him be better. But like, I don't know what he was going through. I don't know how much frustration he had built up to trying to make that work for himself. And I don't know, you know, the breaking point of where he was so upset that he might have been mad and crying and not really upset crying. You know, I don't really know. But I tried to play big man, like, oh, yeah, I know. Don't cry for that, whatever, because it wouldn't have bothered me at all. And I wouldn't even have cared. I would have just put a different $20 in or used a different system or something. You know what I mean? I would have done differently. And eventually we argued for a few minutes about it. And then I gave as much information as I could. They got it. And then they figured it out how to make it work. Some random extra account. They shared it over. I don't know. Whatever they figured out. But, you know, that's me stepping into someone else's space and telling them they shouldn't feel that way. And that's, you know, like I said, I still have problems with it. Like, but that's not the right answer, right? You know, no, he's not going to want to be vulnerable with me if I bother him for wanting to, you know, be upset about something that he actually cares about. Like, I don't care about that game, but he does enough that it bothered him. So I think that, I mean, we're practicing and learning, trying to get better every single day at that. And definitely is not going to, you're never going to be perfect at that for sure.
It's a daily choice too. Like, which again was another thing I heard too in the service, like somebody got up and said that, and it was, you know, it's a daily choice that you have to make. Like you might sometimes like, you know, it might be a hard fought hallelujah. Like you wake up, like I love that song, but you might not feel like being a follower of Christ that day, or you might not really feel like being a dad that day, or, you know, being the top tier husband that day. But it's like, it's a daily choice you have to make. And And I don't think that that's wrong, because I think it's, you know, something that literally every single person battles with every day. Like, there are those times where you're going to wake up and you're not going to feel like it, but it's a continuous choice. Like, it's a continuous development that you make every day that you have to literally, and I think this is something we talked about too, like dying to yourself. Like, you have to literally die to yourself, you know, a little bit every day and be able to, you know, take up that cross or take up, you know, whatever it is, and just be like, yeah, my, you know, my pride or something, whatever it is that's getting in the way, put it to the wayside so that you can be there and, you know, share that with somebody else who needs it.
Yeah, I saw something the other day, and Nick, I wanted to ask you too, because so I saw this this post. It was a quote from First Responders First, and it said, "You grew up to be the adult that you would have protected as a child." After talking about being vulnerable and all those other things, do you think like that resonates with you? I read that for me, and I like started thinking back on like my childhood, and I was like, and it kind of brought in like the phrases and stuff we talk about and like the values and the things like I don't expose my kids to because of like what I was exposed to. And for me, I was like, holy shit. I guess for me personally, I was like, damn, I kind of did grow up to be that dude I would like protect against those things, at least, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if any of us had good parents. I don't know if the 80s or, you know, the 70s, 80s, 90s, I don't know if they were set up for society to help them be good parents or if they were set up to help them help themselves. Maybe there were good parents out there. Maybe the kids didn't experience, but and I've heard this on Joe Rogan before too, like, you know, people that don't suffer when their children don't turn out to be worth their salt. You know what I mean? They're like, if you don't have to get through some shit as a kid, then you don't become a good adult or like have any life experience. Like, I'm not saying my parents were the worst parents ever, but you know I can look back in my mind right now and think, well, they shouldn't have done that. They definitely shouldn't have, you know, left me outside while they were inside the trailer smoking weed, or, you know, just left all the time, just left us at the house with nobody to watch but my older sister, let us eat literally. I mean, not that, you know, when I was a kid, I didn't love it, cause I did love it, but let me eat literally massive amounts of food at no, you know, recourse. And like, we would go to the grocery store and Dad would be like, all right, pick out your boxes of cereal, letting us choose the food we eat. Like, that's probably not a good move. I wouldn't do that. Well, I do buy cereal my kids like, but like, we force them to eat, you know, good food, chicken and vegetables. Like, there's not like a plethora of bad food.
Yeah, I know Allie is like dropping the hammer on that.
Yeah, yeah. But like, when I was a kid, that was not a thing. And I distinctly remember my dad making, I'm not bashing my dad, I never once felt like I was unloved, that he did that better than anyone, I think, you know, made people feel loved. And I felt like he loved me. But if I was the kind of dad he was to us, then I probably wouldn't. I don't know if they'd let it be okay, like, societal wise, like, you know, like, I just don't know. But I definitely felt loved, you know what I mean? But he would make a box of brownies, a full box of brownies, and then cut the pan into four. And then me, my sister, my brother, and him, we'd all eat a quarter of a box of brownies. Like, that was a regular dessert night for us. And then we have like a pitcher. I don't know if you ever got cowtails at like a gas station, but there's a big ass cup, right, that the cowtails are in, right? Cause they're long. Nope. He'd have a couple of those cups and we'd use it as a milk cup. Like, and that would be a milk cup in the middle with four straws and a quarter of a brownie pan. That was dessert for us. Like, that's not a good thing for your kids. You shouldn't do that. So, but I think that without the turmoil of whatever my childhood was, without having to deal with all that shit, you know, I wouldn't have been who I was, you know, strong enough to get through the struggle that I had to get through, to the intestinal fortitude to pass all the selections or all the things that I had to pass. Like, I wouldn't have been able to do it without that. So I wouldn't want to change it. But also I know that my kids will never have to go through something like that. So you have to figure out how to make them feel that kind of struggle. You have to like breed it into your life. Otherwise they're going to grow up soft, period.
It's just like you were saying too, about like when we were talking about people looking at you and being like, hey, this guy's not approachable. Like, you know, you're like that intimidation factor. Like, you know, they just do everything right. And, you know, they're able to get through anything. It's tough as a kid to realize, to look at your parents like that. It's almost impossible, I feel like, you know, because it's something that requires immense maturity to like realize, hey, your parents are doing the best they can. Like in their head, maybe that's what they think is the best, like that they're trying to do. And they're human. Like they're just trying to figure it out too, even though they're, you know, 20 some 30 years older than you. That's something really hard, I think, that you develop later in life and maturity. And, you know, like probably with your example, like, you know, you hope one day Nicholas was like, realizes that, like, you know, I was dad interact, you know, he reacted to this issue one way, but like, you know, I see why he did it that way, you know, that, but you can only hope for that, you know, but realize everybody else is just kind of figuring it out.
Looking back now, knowing what you know now, what would you tell young Nick? And then on top of that, if you met somebody who was young Nick going through everything you were going through and you got to meet him, what would your advice be to him?
Man, I don't know if I'd want him to have the knowledge. I don't know if I'd want to give him any of the information. I don't think anybody was there to not give me information. But like, I think every time somebody gives me the answers to the test, I do less of a job than I could have if I'd had to work for it for myself. You know what I mean? I would say, like, read the Bible more. Read more in general. Like, there are so many books out there that literally have all the information for all the shit that you think you're going through or have already done. Somebody's already gone through it, and there already is examples of what they did and what not to do and things like all that shit's out there. Like, the, you know, one of the best ones is the Bible. It's good. I actually was reading this the other day. I've been doing Proverbs every day, you know, because there's 31 or something like that. You can read one a day, so I've been reading one every day. So on the 15th, I read, this is one of them, Proverbs 15:32. It said, just the first part of it says, those who disregard discipline despise themselves. Bro. Yeah, agreed. Like if you're not literally doing something to discipline yourself, like I know that's the truth. You hate yourself. It's like you don't even want to do anything. You don't even want to, you don't want to take care. You don't want to eat right. You don't, if you're not trying to do, this is just one little, you know, 6-word nugget from one space in this multitude of information book that literally you could talk about for days. You could write on it for days. You could just say it over and over again. Think about like how there are no truer words. Like I'm just being undisciplined makes me hate myself. It's so true. Ugh. So maybe I tell Nick to have a little more discipline because I was overweight for a long time. Like not just a little overweight, obese. Like I could have done a better job. I wasted a bunch of years being obese when I could have not been. That's one thing I would probably have done different is taking care of this one body that you have that is the only one you'll ever have. Like take care of it. That's pretty important.
That's awesome advice, brother.
Any final comments, Gavin?
No, I'm just, like I said, it's an honor to be on here with you guys. And, you know, it's an honor to grow with and, you know, and have a piece in Nick's life and to know his family and him and just everything they've been there, you know, for the whole ride and to see them and grow and everything. It's just been, a blessing to me and just, I continue to learn from him and, you know, look to him for mentorship and brotherhood and just, yeah, very thankful to have him as a member of the team too here with us.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. I know as we continue to grow this thing and like a lot of our guys are still on active duty and they're, you know, spread to the winds, that this thing has started early enough to where I think there's going to be a lot of good things that come as we all get ready to close this chapter on our lives and look on to the next and be able to help people in whatever space that is, right? Whether it's DOD, whether it's, you know, civilian side, schools, universities, whatever. Yeah.
I do want to say one thing.
I appreciate it. Thank you for taking time out of your.
Yeah. I do want to say that. I think that before, when I was in the Army, before I met Allie, before she became my wife, I was more lost than anyone. Now, I did a lot of cool stuff and I had, you know, societal thought like, okay, you know, this guy's doing good for himself or whatever, but I have never been better or had more to give to help others than since the time I met my wife to now. Everything has become more and better because having met her and made her part of my life. And, you know, I assume that was God's plan to put her in my life to make me better. And, it, you know, I think it worked. I think that there's no, none of these things would have happened in my life without her. None of the good that, I think before I met her, I was a good friend and I did a good job of like soldiering and such, but I was pretty selfish. I just didn't realize, you know, I wasn't an adult yet either. But I had to grow up a lot and understand. And she not only has she made me better since the time we met to now, but she continues to make me better now and moving forward. So in the future, when you see me, I'll be better than I was today because I'm married to her, period. Like, and every one of you should get an Allie. And you already got one. But everybody listening, you need to get yourself one.
Absolutely, brother. Yeah. You need somebody in your life who knows when to kind of give you a verbal smacking and to lift you up too and continue to make each other better. And you need those brothers in your life too. Those 27-17 iron sharpens iron type brother. And that's absolutely how I feel with all you guys too. But it's been awesome having you on, man. And thanks for taking the time to talk to us. And we'll, you know, look forward to getting this out here soon and, you know, continuing to inspire others through our stories and our vulnerability with one another.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.